Hey everyone, so I have a special guest with me today, and I'm actually quite excited about it. I've been looking forward to speaking to her. She's known on the internet as Daisy Strongin, and she has a really inspirational story. So Daisy transitioned and later came to regret that decision, detransitioned, and went on to have a family. So it's kind of an amazing story. Daisy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled because yours is a unique story, but I think that we're going to have more stories like yours in the future, because this is just such a very common issue now. Over the past 10 years or so, this just emerged as this massive industry. Let's start at the beginning. When did you first start thinking that you were male?
Sure. So yeah, I was, I had kind of started saying things like about wanting to be a boy from a very young age. Like, I would say I remember being like 6 or 7 years old and saying things like, I'm part boy. And just, I had mostly guy friends. I didn't really feel like I fit in with the other girls as much. But I didn't start thinking about transgenderism until much, much later. I was around 14 years old, and I was very active on a website called Tumblr, which was pretty big at the time in like 2013. And I was obsessed with it. I spent so much time on it. And originally, I wasn't like seeking out the gender stuff, but I was, in a bunch of different fandoms. And there, I guess, was a little bit of intersection there, and it kind of just came up. And I sort of read about these like made up gender identities where it's like, oh, if you can have a gender identity that's something in between male and female. You can be gender queer, you can be gender fluid, and all these like different made up identities. And I remember being 14 and thinking, oh, that. Honestly, I relate to that a lot. Like, I don't feel like a girl. Like, I don't think I would have been able to describe to you exactly what that meant to me or what I meant by that, but I think I am something in between. And at first, it was just like something that I resonated with privately. It was kind of just a personality trait, really. But very quickly, as I became more involved in this discourse, I started looking into like female to male transitions and hormone therapy and top surgery, so-called. And sort of as I was looking into that, I was exposed to the narrative of, if you have gender dysphoria, then you have to transition, otherwise you'll commit suicide, which sounds really extreme, but that's,
I've heard it a
I mean,
lot, yeah.
well, that's like everywhere, and that's only, they've only become more persistent that that's the case. And hearing that as a depressed, like 16-year-old at this point, I had struggled with like suicidal ideation before. So I was having a hard time emotionally, and I was looking for an antidote to my pain. It seemed to my internal experience seemed to line up with the narrative. I've been saying these things since I was a little kid. I like to cross dress all the time in private. And so I basically just determined after a lot of thought, because it's not something, even though I was 16, it's still, I still knew it was a big decision. But I basically determined that I was transgender and that I needed to come out and change my pronouns and start going through this radical transformative process. And I quickly kind of became very excited about it. Like right after I came out, at first I was kind of like, okay, call me he, that would be great, but if you call me she, that's still okay. But very quickly I kind of was like, I became very indoctrinated by it, and it sort of became my whole focus for a while.
Were you pushed to be more aggressive about that by the trans movement, trans friends, that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I was pushed by them, but everyone else was very aggressive about it and just saying, talking about their own experiences and how, like, this is so important. And so it became very important to me. And I actually, the first year or so, I was in high school. I was a senior. I was at the end of my junior year when I came out, and then I was a senior when I was like, I had my whole senior year, I was living as a trans boy. And I like gained a lot of friends, like in real life, who were also like trans or non-binary or, LGBT in some way. And we all supported each other. And at first it was like really great. I felt like I could express a part of myself that I couldn't really express before. And since I had a positive experience with it at first, I thought, wow, like this really is life-saving. Like this really is like true. It is like I just felt more and more validated.
I'm not
And that
surprised.
just
I mean, you went from a situation of being, as you described it, depressed to suddenly be surrounded by all these different supportive friends and like having a community. Like that's huge. It's huge for anyone, especially someone like in their late teens when it's just a difficult time for anyone anywhere.
And I wasn't like super popular, or like it wasn't very easy for me to make friends before. And now that I had like this, I had never had like a group of friends before, like a solid friend group. And now that I had that, it was it felt great, and I felt like it was boosting my confidence even. So that was the first year of being out as trans.
When you were there, sort of like first beginning to move into this, what do you think the main influences were? You mentioned Tumblr, and you're not the first person to mention that Tumblr was like sort of the main, I guess, pull or the main exposure to it. Like I've heard that so many times. Were there any like real life influences, who were also pushing, or was it like the internet that really reeled you in?
Well, it was mainly the internet, Tumblr, and also YouTube, and just, watching like trans YouTubers. But there was one, I knew one person who went to my school, and I went to this really big public school. And this was in like 20, I went to high school 2012 to 2016. So the trans thing was sort of in its infancy, like what it is today, it was in its infancy back then. And I knew one girl who I don't know if she like identified as trans at the time, but she was very butch. She had short hair. She looked like a boy, but I could still tell she was a girl. And she was like a year older than me. So we weren't friends, but I always noticed her, and I was kind of like that. I want to do that. Like, I want to be able to dress like that and look like that. And, it was also, there was another layer of confusion too, because I had this desire to cross dress that I don't really know where it comes from. Like, I just wanted to look like a boy. But every girl that I knew of that wanted to dress like a boy was a lesbian, and I wasn't a lesbian. I knew that I was attracted to boys, so I was kind of like, well, then why do I feel this way? Oh, it must be because I'm trans, because gender is separate from sexuality, and the doctrine of the trans movement just lined up with that. So there was one person that I knew of, like I didn't even know them personally. But then later that person transitioned, and then we became friends. And then actually that person detransitioned too. And so,
Thanks for the go.
So yeah, it was mostly online though, to answer your question.
And when you first like started to transition, or even just like I guess you use the phrase come out, but publicly present as a male, what was the reaction like from your like parents, your family?
From my family, my immediate family, they were kind of like, what is going on? Like, what are you doing? I tried desperately to explain it to them because I really wanted them to understand me, but they were just like, I don't think this is you. Like, you're really not very masculine. Like, you're.
Okay.
And so they were confused by it, and I think my extended family, they didn't really like talk to me about it, but they were probably confused by it as well and had their own opinions. But again, like socially, my friends and just like people at school, even people at school that I didn't know that well, because I came out on Instagram. I was like, I'm trans. I want to go by the name Oliver. And it was this, you know, it was supposed to be this kind of like inspiring romantic thing. And I remember the next day, some people coming up to me and being like, hey, I really admire you for coming out. So again, the social validation was there.
Sure. Would your family, would they use the pronouns and the new name and all of that, or would they refuse to
No, they didn't want to use my preferred pronouns or my new name. They didn't start doing that until like right before I detransitioned, because I think at that point they had given up. So.
Gotcha. And were there any, okay, so they were like, I guess you could say pushing back somewhat in that they weren't, you
Oh
know,
yeah.
okay.
Especially as I went into the, you know, seeking testosterone and surgeries, they became progressively horrified by it. Sorry, I hear my
Go
daughter
ahead.
has woken
Go ahead.
up. Just give me one second.
Would you describe your family as being Christian then?
My mom is Christian, my dad is agnostic. They're both more conservative, though.
Gotcha. And how about in like the rest of society? So you got some pushback from your family, you got some congratulations from friends about your bravery, that kind of stuff. Was anybody else just seem particularly aggressive or friendly? What was it like for you?
Pretty much the only real pushback I got was from my immediate family. So that would be my parents, my brother, and my grandmother were, because they knew me the best, so they just knew that this wasn't right. I think they were of the opinion that it wasn't right in general, but it definitely wasn't right for me. But I pretty much just wrote them off as being transphobic.
And then you started the testosterone when you were 18?
Yeah, I was 18, barely an adult, so.
I know. No, prefrontal cortex hasn't developed. But at that point, what was that like? You started the drugs first, I presume, then the top surgery later, is that correct?
So I called a clinic in downtown Chicago, and they got me an appointment. And so I just did that over the phone, and I was like, oh, well, that's exciting. You know, maybe I'll get hormones soon. Or maybe, yeah, I wasn't sure if I was gonna need like therapy or people, you know, like a therapist or a psychiatrist to sign off on it. I thought it was going to be like a really difficult process. And then the day came for my appointment, and they did tell me like, here are the things that are going to change. Your voice is going to change, and you might get hairier, you'll have like more muscle growth, you might have, you know, an increased risk of like heart related problems, which, you know, is true. I appreciate them like being honest with that. And yeah, I just got my hormones that day. I like did my first shot there. They taught me like how to do it, because it's self-administered injections, so you know it's really important that you do that right. So yeah, but it was really easy. It was not like expensive. I think I spent like $60.
Okay, so it's really affordable.
Yeah, it
And
was very
they
affordable,
didn't get you to see
easy.
anybody to sign off on whether or not you were capable of assenting to that, so any sort of psychologist or anything like that.
No. They asked me some questions about like how long I had been transitioning, and at that point it had been like a year. And I think I looked the part, honestly. Like I looked, you know, like I was trying to look like a boy. And so they figured they had no reason to not believe me. And so, yeah. And then I remember walking out and I was so like happy, and there was another trans person waiting in the lobby who was like, congratulations. It's like, I've just given birth in a hospital and everyone's like so happy for me.
Right.
Yeah.
How did it start to feel then after you started to take the testosterone?
Well, when a female takes testosterone, she goes through what 12, 13-year-old boys go through. She goes through a male puberty, essentially, and that is really unnatural, obviously, and
Sure.
very overwhelming physically and emotionally. I became very my libido was very high.
Okay.
I'll just say that.
Sure.
And so, that led me to a bunch of like really unhealthy habits.
Yeah.
Like pornography and things like that. And of course, at that time, I was like, it's normal,
Right.
it's totally normal. Like, that's what the culture says. It's like, it's okay to watch porn and masturbate every day. Like, it's totally fine. And I was very angry. Like, my anger manifested in a way that it never has for me before, because I felt it was like a physical thing. Like, I wanted to.
Like your body
Like,
was angry.
yeah, it was, yeah, and like punch walls and stuff. Like, I just had this urge to just like externalize my anger in a very physical way, and it was very overwhelming. And yeah, I had never experienced that before, and I had higher energy levels, and I was also prescribed antidepressants kind of around the same time. So I didn't even know if like what was going on with me was, like I knew that the anger and the libido was because of the testosterone, but I was also
Sure.
having like almost manic episodes where I just started engaging in like really, like I had intense mood swings, and I just started engaging kind of like really impulsive, dangerous behavior.
Right.
And yeah, I remember like I was seeing a therapist at that time, and she was like, you're scaring me. Like, you seem like you're going through a manic episode right now. And my mom noticed the same thing. And yeah, it was just a really like weird time for me psychologically.
Imagine. I mean, even as a woman, you have just like natural mood alterations as a result of her estrogen, changing, throughout the month. And so then you add testosterone into this. It's just a very weird, like you said, unnatural mix. It's like
Oh, yeah.
you just expect like it's difficult for me to know what you experience because I just haven't experienced it. So it's really fascinating to listen to you. But at the same time, like you could almost anyone could predict that it would result in some volatility. Like how could it possibly not,
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was so, like, I was very disconnected from my body throughout this entire process. Like, I was aware of the changes that were happening. But not, I didn't really know what it was doing internally. I was just kind of paying attention to how I felt.
Sure.
But yeah, like I didn't really feel connected to my body. I was kind of dissociating from it because it became like this really problematized thing, because it's female. My body's female. My gender identity is male. There's this like discordance there
Sure.
that, yeah,
Yeah.
so I started to antagonize my body, really.
Do you think in retrospect, just an opinion here, that what you experienced with the rages and all of that kind of ties into the concept that's described on the internet as trans rage, so just with these like shootings and this kind of stuff, or just an increase in aggression by trans people, at least so it seems per capita.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely has to do with with testosterone, just generally. But I also think that it's like I see more and more that gender ideology is a religious idea, like, and people get very just fired up about it because it's so life and death to them, and it's just so important and elevated, and it's just it's very cult-like, and I think that psychologically changes people as well.
Definitely, that makes sense. And then after that, so how long were you on the testosterone before you thought about the top surgery?
Well, I think once I was on testosterone, I knew that I
Okay.
eventually wanted to have top surgery because I was wearing a binder every day, so I was basically like smushing down my breasts
Right.
every day so that I looked flat, so that I could pass. Passing was really important to me. And before I was on testosterone, I didn't pass at all because I still looked like, I sounded very female. And of course, I was operating under the assumption that I was going to be trans for the rest of my life. I'm not going to bind for the rest of my life. So I have to get top surgery so that I can, like go swimming shirtless and do all of these like things that the trans community sees as like almost like rites, like rituals, or I guess. Like there was this whole idea of like this like romanticized idea of like being on the beach for the first time shirtless as a trans guy, and how freeing that feels. And the idea of just being flat without having to like wear this thing that restricts my breathing, it's like obviously I'm gonna eventually need to do that.
Gotcha.
So I don't know when I probably started like looking for a surgeon and seeking it out in probably 2017. So just like 2 years after I came out. And then I had several like appointments leading up to it. And for the surgery, I did need to have a psychiatrist sign off on it. That wasn't hard to do. And I think I needed two letters. I needed one from my general doctor who like doesn't know me at all. And my psychiatrist really doesn't know me at all either. She just prescribes me pills. I just go in and say
Sure.
like, I'm anxious, I can't focus. And
What
she's like,
psychiatrists
here's
do.
Zoloft. Oh, you have gender dysphoria. Okay, I'll sign off this letter for you. So yeah.
Do you think they're afraid not to, though? Like the social environment right now is such that if they refuse to sign off, that they'll get all kinds of different,
Yeah,
pressure from the industry, even itself, the medical industry.
I think it's probably a mixture of pressure and just ignorance, because there weren't that many like detransitioners at this time, and so people just kind of accepted the narrative that like, oh, gender dysphoria, that there's a treatment for that, and it's gender transition, and okay, yeah, whatever. Like, I think it was probably a mixture of ignorance, apathy, and pressure to go along with the culture.
Was there, fast forwarding a little bit here, was there a huge moment in which you suddenly regretted your decisions up to that point, or was it like a gradual questioning?
It was definitely gradual, but there were a few moments that really kind of made me worried that what I had done was wrong. One of those was I was probably like, I didn't have any moments like that before top surgery. Top surgery was like, it was right in the middle of the 5 years that I was trans. So it was kind of almost like the climax. And then after that, I didn't want to do anything else. So I was just left with what I had done. And so one moment was when I was probably like 21, and I was starting to think about like, if I wanted kids, how would I go about having them? And I always kind of thought like, maybe surrogacy. Now I'm against surrogacy, like all
But in that
but
mindset, yeah.
yeah. So, Lila, no, don't look at the camera. I was just kind of like, how much does surrogacy cost, first of all? And because I was just totally ignorant of it. It costs like $90,000, like at least. And I was like, oh wow, that's like it should have been obvious to me that that would be expensive, but I just didn't know how expensive it was. And then that's when, you know, I was thinking about my options. I was like, okay, I could go down the route of adoption, but I just don't even know if I'm like a good enough person for, like, I think like and then I remembered like I could get pregnant, or I could marry a man and get pregnant. And yeah, I guess I could like continue pretending to be a guy, 'cause some people do that. Like, I have no idea how, but
Right, when you're
some,
actively carrying a child.
yeah, like transgender females who get pregnant, go through pregnancy, give birth, and still identify as men. I just knew that like I was never going to be able to like really comfortably be like at that level of delusion.
Sure.
And so that was one moment. Obviously I didn't just decide like right then and there that I was going to detransition, but that was definitely a
But you had like a
poignant.
biological urge that sort of kicked in.
Yeah,
Is that fair?
yeah. You know, because when I made this decision as a 17-year-old, like I wasn't thinking about having kids at
Sure.
all. Like, it was probably something like, you know, I would have said like, yeah, maybe when I'm 35, like
Yeah.
I'll figure out a way to have a child. But it just like didn't matter to me, and breastfeeding certainly didn't matter to me either. So that was a hard moment when I researched that, because
I'm sure.
I was like, well, yeah, like I want to have my own kid, but now I won't be able to breastfeed them. Like, even if I detransition, like, I don't know how. So I just kind of stopped thinking about it and kind of left it at that. It was, for a while, it was something that I really just tried to suppress the feelings of regret, because it's like I've done so much
Right,
and
it's
I
like there
have.
was no going back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was one moment. And then another, you know, there were just some times where I was just like alone with my thoughts, and I would just kind of look at my chest and look at like my body basically, and realize that like, man, you know, I didn't really have that. Like, I didn't feel super insecure about my body. I mean, I did, because every young woman does, but
Yeah.
now I feel extremely insecure about it, because I'm, you know, supposed to be a 21-year-old man, and I don't look like a 21-year-old man at all. Like, I'm still super skinny and like curvy, and you know, I don't have any like hair. Like, I just look off. Like, I don't even quite look like a young boy. I don't like, I look like something else. And so it's like, well, this was supposed to help my body dysmorphia and not make it worse.
Sure.
So that was a big red flag as well.
Okay, so there were the two like main factors, and then at some point you decided to make the leap. What changed?
So it was during the COVID lockdown in like May of 2020, and obviously I was spending a lot of time alone, and just I didn't have the external validation, and like the high from that really had worn off a long time ago at that point. And I was just really kind of, it was a heavy burden on my consciousness at this point. I probably started like feelings akin to regret in like 2019, but I was just like trying to say like, no, like you signed up for this, you have to stick with it, and just ride this out, and you'll be fine. Like, just keep being a guy. But then I think in 2020, like there was a day where it was time for me to take my weekly testosterone shot, and I was like, I do not want to do this anymore. Like, I don't want to further jeopardize my fertility. I don't, like, I just don't think this is healthy. I don't I just had decided at that point, like, I don't want to take another testosterone shot. And I think at that point, I knew that stopping testosterone meant detransitioning. So, yeah, that was the moment I think I decided officially that I was going to detransition.
It's a really brave move because you're giving up on, I mean, on so much. Like you said, you invested a lot into this,
Yeah.
and obviously, even though that's wrong, it's like a person's mind gets latched onto those things,
Yeah.
and then you surround yourself in a social circle that encourages it as well. So that had to have just been a really isolating and thus brave decision. I mean, really,
Yeah.
it's
And I
commendable.
had started sort of like, sorry.
Oh yeah, you're fine.
I started kind of like watching other detransitioners and feeling like, oh, I relate to their feelings a lot too. And it was sort of, there were a few more women who were kind of my age who were talking about, you know, it had similar timelines. So I was like, okay, well, it's not like I'll be the only person in the world that'll have this experience. Yeah, I'll have to go through my life with a deep voice and no breasts, but honestly, it's probably just better to live in reality. And I felt very relieved when I started living in reality again.
Had you by that point sort of stopped feeling as if you were male? Had those feelings just mostly gone away?
Don't know. Being Ollie at that point was my comfort zone.
Okay.
The idea of like starting to dress feminine again and presenting that way was very uncomfortable at first. But it's also like I had already like lived out this fantasy for 5 years, 24/7. You know, it's like, okay, I don't think I need to do this anymore. Like I've indulged the fantasy. I've recognized that it is a fantasy and
Right.
it's not a reality. It's not like, you know, I don't believe that I have a gendered soul anymore. And the trans movement is I'm starting to see how it's going really off the rails.
Yeah.
I don't agree with it. Like, I don't agree with the ideology. So how can I continue to live it out, you know? Like I was doing it passively. I wasn't like, you know, a proud trans activist at this point anymore. I was just kind of like not detransitioning,
Right.
basically.
You're just living in a certain way.
Yeah.
Right. But it does sound like there was a I mean, obviously there are multiple mind shifts there, but the one that kind of like is interesting to me is that, from 18 when you were very much feeling like you were a guy on the inside, and then you fast forward to this point and you've sort of delineated the idea that it's a fantasy from the reality. And I think that, there have been these studies that have not really cited very much anymore, but that showed that so many people just simply grow out of this if they're just kind of left alone, and that's the thing. And I wonder, do you think that would be the case with you if you had not, taken the steps, or what do you think? Yeah.
That was another moment, if you will, where it kind of gave me pause. It was the realization that I probably would have been able to work through the gender dysphoria just on my own without hormones and top surgery and all that. Like I probably would have survived. I actually was like, no, I definitely would have survived.
Right, because I mean, there are plenty of women. I mean, maybe they weren't in your circle necessarily, but there are plenty of women who dress in more masculine ways. I mean, frankly, I think most women now in the modern world sort of dress somewhat, in a neutral way. The way that men dress and the way that women dress on an everyday basis is not as differentiated as it once was. You know what I mean? And so.
And like now it's like I don't, you know, I can do both. If I like, it's not, it's not that deep for me anymore. Like, if I
Sure.
want to wear pants, I'll wear pants. If I want to wear a dress, I'll wear a dress. It doesn't mean anything.
Right. So it
You know?
seems like if you'd gone through if you had gone through the same thing like 20 years earlier, you might have gone through a phase of like wearing really boyish clothes for, I don't
Yeah,
know,
and I
several
did when
years.
I was a kid.
Right, and then perhaps just simply grown past it.
Yeah, because no one would have told me, like, oh, this means you're a boy.
Exactly.
Oh, this means you're in the wrong body. Like, that's just not a good idea to introduce to an adolescent ever.
No, it's dangerous. I think it's honestly, I just think it's evil, you know, to say to the confused kid, as we're all confused children when we're children. That's part of like being a child, you know. Actually, maybe you're this other thing on the inside, and just kind of just confuse everything while they're in this state of hormonal imbalance and immature development and everything else. It's
Yeah, and
tragic.
I remember I was always trying to like diagnose myself when I was in like middle school, early high school. I was like, maybe I have like autism, maybe I have borderline personality disorder or multiple personality. Like I was like trying to diagnose, like trying to figure out what was wrong with me. I wanted like a label that I could sort of
Sure.
almost blame my behavior on, or like have it like just I wanted to understand myself and why I was the way that I was, because everyone else, I had this idea that everyone else was normal, and I just kind of felt like, I don't know, like a freak, like there was something wrong with me. Like I didn't know, I wasn't very good at like socializing with people. People didn't
Sure.
like me all that much. People, you know, I was like, I feel like I'm interesting and cool, but no one else seems to.
On the internet,
So,
though, you can always find somebody who seems as quirky as you, matches your degree of
yeah,
quirky.
that's why I spend so much time on the internet.
Exactly. I think it happens to so many young people that way. They can't find just the right group that, you know, they feel at home with, and therefore they find it on the internet, and that just goes in a really dark, destructive,
Yeah.
direction.
Yeah, it feels really good and innocent at first. Like, when I was learning about all the genderqueer stuff, like
Yeah.
there didn't seem to be anything nefarious about it. 'Cause, I wasn't groomed by adults. I think the content that I was consuming was from other like girls my age who were actually just like going through the same thing. And, that's not a new phenomenon, of, young women sort of feeding into each other's pain
Sure,
in
I mean, you saw that
community.
with like things like the emo movement, in which like self-harm was spread around and encouraged and that kind of thing. That was like a big part
Yeah.
of it.
I remember that. I cut myself when I was a teenager because I saw it online.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's like, and so that's the thing. It's one of those things where you think it's a very new and novel idea, and then you remember back at these different, like really frankly dark chapters that we've had not that far back in history,
Yeah.
and it's what happens. People at that age are just so vulnerable to the suggestion and to the desire for community. So when that's offered to them, it's like they just really do just sort of like really latch on
Yeah.
to that.
Yeah.
You converted to the Catholic faith. So did I a couple of years ago. So I don't know if I'm saying welcome, if you're saying welcome. But how did or did it overlap with your detransitioning?
It very much overlapped with my detransition. So I was raised Christian. I mentioned my mom was Christian.
Sure.
We went to a non-denominational Protestant church, and I had a very like strong faith when I was like in probably when I was like 11, like 7th grade. I remember I just had a very kind of like childlike faith, and I knew that Jesus died for me and that he loved me, and then that was all I knew. And that was enough for me. But then I learned about the doctrine of like sin and hell, and like anyone who doesn't believe in Jesus like goes to hell. And I was like, well, that's awful. Like that means my dad's going to hell, and all these other people who don't believe the same way. And that just really kind of turned me off to it, and I decided, like, you know, this doesn't really make any sense. So I just fell away from it, and was kind of anti-Christian all throughout high school. And then while I was in the middle of my transition, actually, I started listening to Jordan Peterson, and he talks a lot about God. And I found what he said about God, it was articulated in a way that was very compelling to me. He wasn't preachy at all, because he's not even Christian, but
I know,
like,
it's fascinating just how many people he pulls into the faith.
yeah. And so this is in like 2017. This is a long time ago. But he kind of got me thinking and almost obsessing over the question of like, okay, wait, like, what do I actually believe about God? You know, I've been sort of agnostic and not thinking about it and not really caring whether or not God is real, but I should care about this question. But I just have no idea. Like, I have no idea how I should answer it or what I should do or if God is real, like which God is real. So I was like, I just kind of became interested in going to church and not becoming a member of a church or actually practicing, because I felt like me being trans, like, I don't know if that's gonna work.
Sure.
So I basically was just kind of going to church, like a different church every week, like a different Protestant church every week, and just kind of being like, oh, you know, how do I feel about this one? How do I feel about this one? What did I think of their worship service and the way that they, you know, preach or
Right.
whatever? Or, oh, this guy said something bad about gay people. I don't want to go back there, like, 'cause I felt uncomfortable. Or, oh, this progressive church is different. And yeah, so I just kind of was going to different churches. I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I like this. I find this interesting. And but still the question was nagging me. I was like, I don't know if I'll ever be comfortable having a decisive answer on it. And this is really bugging me because everyone has a different opinion. And you know, there's like a million different denominations, and I don't know which one is right. So then when I detransitioned in 2020, it felt like that barrier that was between God and I was no longer there. And because that really was the reason why I wasn't going deeper into it. Because I was like, I came to realize, like, I was made female. That wasn't up to me. That was never up to me. And it's not up to me now. Something, somebody made me this way. Like, this was a sovereign decision. And it's like I should try to live out like who God called me to be as a woman. I can't do that saying that I'm a man. And so yeah, I basically like I detransitioned, and you know, I just like opened my heart up to Jesus, basically. And was like, okay, I'm gonna start reading scripture. I'm going to try to read the whole Bible. I'm going to start praying and just like see what happens. And it was a very like profound experience. And I learned a lot and I started to develop a real like personal relationship with Jesus and started like going to church, like one church. I started going to the church I grew up going to. And yeah, so that was when I converted to back to Christianity. But I wasn't thinking about Catholicism at all because I just was so ignorant about it, and I was like, I wasn't raised that way, so it's like I couldn't really see myself converting. And then I kind of fell away again for a few months and just really struggled with my prayer life because it was kind of an emotional experience converting back to Christianity, and that kind of wore off. And I was like, I'm trying to persevere, but like my faith just feels weaker. And I was still struggling with just like the sheer amount of denominations and all of the like Christian discourse. And it's like, I feel like no Christian really like there's no unity. Like it became very annoying. I was like, I just want to like know what the truth is, and I want to know what to
Yeah.
do, and just, follow that. So I knew nothing about Catholicism. Well, the reason why I started going back to church yet again, when I was pregnant with my son, so this was like 2 years ago,
Okay.
and I wanted to raise him in church. I still wasn't totally sure where I stood, but I was like, I'm tired of thinking about myself. I do think that being a Christian is good and going to church is good, so I think we should start going to church, and we should like get our son baptized. And I chose to go, me and my husband chose to go to an Episcopal church because I was like, I want something more liturgical and serious and not so much about me. And but I was like, I'm not Catholic. So Episcopal is kind of like Catholic, but it's not actually
Catholic
Catholic.
light.
Yeah. And it's also, it's kind of progressive, which I don't love, but this church wasn't obnoxious about it. And that's when I learned about the Eucharist. And that's when I started thinking about, okay, well, what's Catholicism then? If this is, this I had never even been to a Catholic mass before, but the Episcopal Church was still very different from anything that I'd experienced. And so I was like, okay, well, so I started, researching Catholicism. I was like, what do they believe about the Eucharist? Oh, that it's Jesus? Wait, like actually Jesus? Huh. That's wow. I didn't know that. I had no idea. I thought that, non-Catholics weren't able to take the Eucharist because Catholics were just liked to exclude people. It's like, no. And I was like, that's crazy. I had no idea they believed that. So what does the Episcopal Church believe? Something kind of muddy and confusing. Okay. Why doesn't the Catholic Church ordain women? Why in the Episcopal Church does? Oh, because they just decided that they wanted to. But, the Catholic Church has 2,000 years of history, and that was when I actually considered. That was when I first started, realizing and hearing people say that this is actually the original church, and this is actually the one true church that Jesus Christ himself founded. And, I had always said, like, I want the truth. It seems to make sense that I should maybe look into following the church. Following the oldest church, following the apostolic church. And I didn't really consider orthodoxy. Well, I'm sure I did, but I just felt proximity-wise more like close to Catholicism, and I don't know. That's where I was being pulled. I think if God wanted me to convert to Eastern Orthodoxy, he would have found a way to do it. But yeah, so I talked to my husband about it, and he had kind of been echoing the same sentiments of like, I don't think I can be a Protestant. I think if I'm going to be a Christian, I want to be a Catholic. He had read a lot of like Catholic author, so he knew a little bit about it. And yeah, well, like we just started going to mass and just didn't stop. And then a few months after going to mass, I just approached a priest and was like, I want to convert. How do I do that? And so I didn't actually do like a formal RCIA. The priest that I approached, he's a priest at a traditional Latin mass parish. That was another thing. I discovered the traditional Latin Mass.
What do you
And,
think of it?
well, with the Novus Ordo Masses, it was like, I know more what's going on.
Yeah.
And it does feel different in a sense that it's not about me. But the traditional Latin Mass, it just felt even more so like, oh, this is not about me
Yeah.
at all. And I was just very, like, fascinated by it. It's like, wow, this is the mass, like, that this is the mass of the ages. Like, this exact ritual has been going on for thousands of years, and it's the mass of the saints. And I was just so, I had never experienced a like church service that has such, I don't even like to call it service. That's the Protestant in me saying
It's
like
okay,
a
I
church
understand.
service. But like there's nothing in Protestantism that has such a rich, deep history. And I began to find it very beautiful and logical. And you know, the things that I thought would be keeping me out of it, like the Marian doctrines, it just kind of quickly like, oh no, like that makes perfect sense. Like obviously the mother of God is not going to be just some random lady, you know?
Yeah.
Like obviously she is set apart. And like, yeah, you know, some people might say that I'm like, you know, just easily indoctrinated and believe, you know, I can't think critically. But yeah, like there were some things where I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay, I'll just accept that. You know, like when you convert to Catholicism, there are some things where it's like you don't necessarily have to have a perfectly constructed logical explanation of everything, like the assumption of
It's just like it's
Mary
not even that. It's like
or
there's just so much there, at least for me. Like again, I converted just a couple of years ago, but it's like so you kind of have to like learn the parts that are, I guess, most fundamental, and then
yeah.
after that, when you have this understanding of the faith and its starting point, like you were talking about an apostolic succession, then after
Yeah.
a certain point, it's like okay, you know, I assent to what the church teaches because I trust what
Yes.
it claims for itself. That it is the church
Yeah,
that Christ
exactly.
founded, you know. And so that's the I
Yeah.
assent on faith to its authority because of where it gets that authority and because you believe in that
Yeah.
line.
And with being a Protestant, like I felt such a heavy burden and pressure because, you know, while I do respect their emphasis on scripture, it's like you have to be able to determine this on your own.
Yeah.
Like you have to read the whole Bible, you have to determine exactly what it means, and you better hope that your conclusions are
And what
right.
every line means, yes. And that's the thing. It's like
Yeah.
you have to read it enough that you understand every passage and correctly, and then know that there are all these different denominations that have interpreted it differently, hence why they're
Yeah.
separate, and somehow assert that you alone know more than anybody else who's come before and who's done the same thing, and know more than, in the case of, you know, the Catholic Church, all of the different church fathers from the very beginning. You know, it's just kind of when you really think about it in those terms, that's when I was like, okay, yeah, I can't make that determination that like I alone am the interpreter of scripture. You know, it just seems kind of
Right. Yeah.
crazy.
Because it's like, why is my interpretation any more valid than anyone
Right,
else's?
exactly.
I'm still gonna twist this. I'm still gonna, you know, have temptation to kind of like make it say what I want to say,
Exactly.
you know? And so ultimately, though, the Eucharist is what really made me stop going to the Episcopal Church and turn to the Catholic Church. Because just learning about that doctrine, like, and then reading and really paying attention to John 6, it's like pretty clear to me that Jesus is not like speaking as a metaphor. He's very
Yeah.
serious. And people are like, "What are you talking about? That's disgusting." He's like, "No, like this is my body.
Yeah.
Like you unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven." And it's like, why would that be a metaphor?
And
That's
people
not
left, you
not
know? There were some of the followers at the time who left, like, this is too much to us. that was too much for us. And he didn't like say, oh, but I meant it metaphorically. Like, and he had the opportunity right then, because people right then were already saying that they were, unwilling to accept this doctrine, basically, and they walked away. And he did not change the doctrine or change said, I don't mean it this way, I just mean it spiritually. That's not the case at all.
So, yeah, that was ultimately, to make a long story short, the Eucharist is what, and I know many other
Oh,
people
yeah.
probably would say the same thing, that that is so unique to the Catholic Church. And like, I started going to adoration before I was officially Catholic, and just I was approaching my faith in just a very different way, just a, like a brand new mindset that God was introducing me to. And it was through his mother, because I started praying the rosary every single day, like right away. I remember I wanted to pray the rosary before, when I, was just, evangelical Christian. I was like, I want to pray the rosary, but I have to say Hail Mary over and over again, and I just like know about that. But I loved the idea of like meditative prayer and meditating on Jesus's life. I think one time I tried to pray the rosary, but I had no idea how to do it. So I was just saying the Jesus prayer over and over again, because I didn't want to say the Hail Mary. And that was the only time that I did that. But yeah, so I picked up that practice, and I just, yeah, it's been
Yeah,
fantastic.
it's a
I'm
beautiful story.
so
You
glad
went
that I
through.
made that decision. I haven't regretted it for a second. It's been pretty hard, because I'm very sinful, and
We all are.
I, yeah, and but the sacrament of confession, that was also a big deal for me. It's like, that seems like a great idea. Like, that seems like a great thing. And just living a sacramental life, like really living out your faith and being able to live it out every day. Like, I will share, the past week or so, I've started to really make an effort to go to mass every single day. Like, go to daily mass. Like, I kept coming up with excuses. Like, oh, I have two little kids, I can't do it. My local parish has three different daily mass
Oh,
times.
beautiful.
And like, yeah, like, there's, I don't have an excuse. Like, why wouldn't I want to receive Jesus in the Eucharist every day?
Yeah,
So
I'm a daily mass
I've been
goer
really
too.
making an effort to go to daily mass, and it's been great. I love being Catholic.
Me too. So connecting this back with what we've been talking about, so you joined the faith, you found a husband, you have two daughters, is that right?
I have a son and a
Son and
daughter.
daughter. All right. And were you after the medical interventions that you received, were you afraid of difficulties conceiving? Because you kind of talked about that a little bit earlier on.
Yes. Well, yeah, when I was dating my husband, I was not sure if I could have children. I just didn't know. It wasn't something that I spent a lot of time thinking about, because I was like, that would be so devastating, because that would be my fault if that's the case. But we ended up getting pregnant like immediately.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that was just astounding to me, that it happened right away. I was so nervous about, month after month, like not succeeding in conceiving a child, and like how nervous and scared that would make me. But that was really amazing, finding out that I was in fact quite
Yeah,
fertile.
praise God.
Yeah, and I knew that, like, I was never on puberty blockers, thankfully. That's really what jeopardizes fertility, not necessarily hormone replacement therapy on its own. I was, however, getting closer to the 5 year mark. I was on testosterone for 3 years and 9 months.
Okay.
And I knew that as my reproductive system started to atrophy, because when you're on testosterone, your reproductive system basically is just not doing
Yeah.
anything. Like it's not going through the normal cycle. So it starts to atrophy, and that can be very, very painful. And then you need a hysterectomy. And then obviously you can't have kids. So that's why I stopped, because I wanted to keep my uterus. And so, but still, I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know what effect the testosterone had. Not everyone can say the same, and not every detransitioner can say the same. And I never want to sound like I'm like bragging about my life. I know that like fertility is a very sensitive topic for some people. So I, you
Of
know.
course, but it is a beautiful story and it's okay to celebrate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
you know, your kids are gifts. It's okay to be very, you know, grateful for them. Yeah, I
Yeah.
wouldn't be apologetic
And then
about that.
I got pregnant with her. Nine months after Gabriel was born. And I'm okay with saying their
Okay.
names. I've said their names before. And so, yeah, like the past 2 years have just been insane. Like pregnant for 9 months, have, you know, not pregnant for 9 months, then I'm pregnant for another
Yeah.
9 months. And I'm wanna probably take some time off for a while, because I've got two
Yeah.
kids up too, but like I just love being a mom. I mean, I didn't think of myself as a very like maternal, motherly person before. But just having that come out and just like seeing my life as not necessarily like it's my choice, but like as a vocation. Because that's also kind of a Catholic
Yeah.
concept I, you know, what just wasn't familiar with at all. But it's like, no, like this is a vocation. This is how you glorify God with your life, is by being the best mother and wife that you can be, and try to reflect Christ in your life as a wife and mother. And like, I don't have to say that it's hard. Everybody knows that it's hard, but it's so good. Like it's the best thing that I've ever done, and it just brings me so much joy. And all of the anxieties that I have, and the frustration and the impatience that I experience, I can offer it up, and I can.
It's great timing.
And I can devote myself more to Mary, and become closer to her too. And so yeah, my life definitely took like a huge 180
Yeah, I mean it
4 years
in a
ago.
fabulous way. I mean, because the state that you're in
Yeah.
now, I mean, it's obviously, yes, you're going to have bad days and some hurdles, but it's good. It's objectively good. I
Yeah.
do want to ask your question about something before we wrap up. I don't personally think that a person should be able to agree to the sort of medical interventions that you went through. Like, I know that a lot of people, especially on the right, will say, well, kids shouldn't be able to agree to it. And that's true,
Yeah.
but I also think that an adult shouldn't either, because I think it's like with an amputation. If somebody came and said, I want my right arm chopped off, even though it's perfectly fine, I don't think there's a point at which we
Yeah.
say, well, he's 25, you know, he can make his own decision. I don't think that's right, because I don't think it demonstrates the capacity of reason, you know.
Right. No, there's clearly, first of all, gender dysphoria is real, but it's a mental
Yeah.
problem. You don't resolve a mental problem or a psychological problem by having radical plastic surgery, or having, you know, these incredibly unnatural physical treatments. You can go to therapy to work it out, and I'm not even talking about like conversion therapy, which I don't even think that's a thing. Like I've never heard of that, like conversion therapy proper, but like you can go to therapy, you can take medication, you can like do other things to address mental problems. And there's a way to like be honest with yourself that you have these feelings. But like the answer is not to cut your breasts off. Like it's just not. I mean, I have progressively become more and more radicalized on this issue. I think when I was first detransitioning, I probably would have said the same thing, like, oh, kids shouldn't be able to do it, but adults can do what they want. But like my eyes have just been really open to it now that I'm on the other side of it. It's like no adult should be able to do this. I'm sorry. Like I just Lila, are you done? I just, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think anyone should be able to do this, honestly. I think that it's a symptom of a very, very, very bad idea that we as a society have just fully accepted and now celebrate. And it's just based on nothing really in reality. Like the studies that have been done on it are really flawed. The studies that have been done on it that show that it's bad have been suppressed. So I don't even know. I don't know what the future holds.
What has been the reaction from the people around you for your? I mean, you basically flipped, as you said, you did a 180. Was
Yeah.
that how was that received?
Well, I'm sure some of my old friends think that I've lost my mind. I none of them have like confronted me, but I'm sure a lot of them are like, what happened? Like, what are you what are you doing? Like, because I have a completely different worldview now and it's completely against theirs. But obviously, like my family was very happy about
I
it.
bet.
I wasn't happy about it at first because I was like, oh my gosh, like I've just made this horrible decision and I don't know what the future holds. Overall, the response has been very positive.
All right, well, thank you for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. I mean, you give a really powerful witness, and
Thank
it's
you.
fabulous just to hear how you've come through on the other side with so many just successes, frankly. But I will let you go. I know that Lila wants your attention for sure. But thank you for coming on. How should people find you and follow you in the future? Is there an ideal way?
I'm probably most active on X. My username is Daisy is not here. It's an old account that I made when I was like in eighth grade. So that was my username then, and that's my username now. But yeah, just search my name. You'll find me on X. I have an Instagram where I'm less active. I don't talk about the gender stuff as much there, but that's, you know, same thing. Just search my name. My username's DM Strong in on that. So
All right.
if you want my gender rantings, go to X.
Okay. All right, certainly. Well, thank you again, and I hope to maybe, get you back on the show at some point in the future, but this was phenomenal, so thank you.
Yeah, this was great. Thank you so much for having
All
me.
right, bye.